Hello, and thank you for tuning in. You are listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. You can listen and subscribe to the show for free on Spotify, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Blog Talk Radio, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Audible. For network or show information, visit biteradio.me. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for today's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, we have a wonderful returning guest, Jonathan Hammond, and we'll be talking about his new book, The Shaman's Mind, Huna Wisdom to Change Your Life. Jonathan Hammond is an author, teacher, shamanic practitioner, and spiritual counselor. He is a graduate of Harvard University and the University of Michigan. He teaches classes in shamanism, spirituality, energy healing, and Huna at the Omega Institute for Holistic Studies, Penn State University, and One Spirit Learning Alliance. Jonathan has completed all core curriculum through the Foundation for Shamanic Studies, and he has completed intensive training in the therapeutic facilitation of psychedelics with Inward Bound Pilot. Jonathan has worked and studied alongside shamans in Mexico, Brazil, Bali, Costa Rica, Nicaragua, and Hawaii. His book, The Shaman's Mind, Huna Wisdom to Change Your Life, is available wherever books are sold. He also has an album of shamanic journeys and meditations entitled The Shaman Within, and that is produced by Hemi Sink. For more information, you can visit his website, which is jonathanhammond.com, and that's jonathanhammond.com. And with that, I'd like to welcome Jonathan to the show. Good day, Jonathan. Aloha.
Aloha from Maui, Robert Sharp. It's so good to be here.
Thank you very much. And as I mentioned, the last time we spoke was in February 7th, 2020, which was a little over 4 years ago. So I'm sure there's been quite a bit of change in your life during that time period, no?
Well, I think probably the biggest change is that I moved from New York City to Maui, which is where I, right after I talked to you, I moved here. My book, The Shaman's Mind, is about, it's about shamanism in general, but it definitely has a Hawaiian bent. So Hawaii has definitely called me and it's really been wonderful. It's welcomed me with open arms. It's been wonderful to be a part of this land, and to find a new community. It's been wonderful.
Yeah. Now the Haole hasn't been a problem, then, huh? With the locals?
It really hasn't. Hawaii is really quite a melting pot. And when I first got here, I was sort of worried about that. And what I found more and more is that one is considered Hawaiian based on love of the land. Of course, there are cultural considerations and lineages and all of that, but it's really about loving Hawaii. There's a breed of person called the born again Hawaiian, and I think I'm probably one of them. But it's been wonderful to be here and to feel contributive to this place rather than just consuming of this place. And I definitely feel that has been my calling. In fact, many local Hawaiians, when they ask me what my book is about, and I tell them it's about Hawaiian shamanism, as opposed to what you would think you would get, which is, how dare you, it's about thank you for caring. That's the message that I get more than anything else. Yeah.
Well, that's good. And, you know, it is, you know, that the aloha spirit. I know when I visited there a couple times, it's kind of permeates everything, every way of living and everything that people do. And it's a very open and loving kind of not only green, but also a way of living.
It does. It's also important to say, though, that that the people here are still American, and they are still struggling very much with a lot of the same things that people are struggling with on the mainland. We just had a major ecological disaster here, which is the Lahaina fire, where an entire town, the original capital of the Hawaiian Kingdom, burned soup to nuts, the whole thing, which felt very much like a message.
Mm-hmm.
Think of fire. Fire is the energy of all bets are off, that we're starting over, that it's transmuting energy, and it's fierce. And my sense of what happened there spiritually is, of course, climate change. That's absolutely a part of it, and I don't think there's enough talk about the fact that this was fire and wind, not conspiracy theories, not government conspiracies, nothing like that. This was fire and wind. And I think that Lahaina held many symbols of what Hawaii originally was. And I think that the mother, who created this very difficult tragedy, was sending a message that it's not about the symbols. It's about actually taking what the symbols represent and giving them a lived form again. And that's how I think the earth is talking to us right now.
Yeah, yeah. And when I saw that happening, it just hurt my heart, because I had one of my visits was to Maui and of course, Lahaina. It was just such a beautiful place, you know, but it's, you know, like you said, I mean, the whole idea of, in a way, the symbolism of it, that it seemed to me kind of like a purging and in a way for a phoenix to arise out of it, you know, I mean, just, you know, a rebirth in a way.
And it's very interesting. Very interesting because so many people have been displaced. You never hear this story where indigenous people win, but there within the last week there have been new laws that are going into effect that are about kind of turning capitalism on its head a little bit here, and about and what they're doing with phasing out some vacation rentals, meaning. Basically, rich people who come here a couple times a year, and the rest of the time they're renting out their places to other rich people who come here. Meanwhile, there are all these displaced, you know, over 6,000 families who are needing housing, and the government did a very counterintuitive and counter-capitalistic initiative, and said we're going to phase those out until our people are housed. And I think that that is some of the change in consciousness that is so difficult for the West that needs to happen. If we think that we're going to sustain ourselves, that we're going to get through this ecological crisis that we're in and not sacrifice and not realize that what is sacred requires our sacrifice, that it's something that we have to fight for, and the earth is sacred, and the people and their ways being, which came from the land, what was taught to them from nature itself, cannot be lost, and we're so close to losing it, and it's so important that we recognize that. And it's not just indigenous people, it's all of us, all of our connection with nature, and our reverence for nature, and even the idea that we can, at this time on the planet, be re-enchanted with nature, that in and of itself would be so healing. So much of the the spiritual dialogue that I hear in contemporary spirituality is sort of this post-apocalyptic, off-planet, new consciousness, channeled wisdom from the other planets. And while that has its place, there is natural, sacred enchantment that nature itself is a spirit, an agentive, a being, organism, to be in conversation with us, and is hurt because we have stopped that conversation.
Yeah. And, you know, that reimagining of social structure and kind of the support mechanisms of the town is, I mean, it wouldn't have been able, I don't think, to come into being unless it had such a dramatic event happened. You know, I mean, that, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, the idea of, you know, we've been experiencing for, I think, a period of time where structures, societal structures and ways of living have been kind of shattered, like the pandemic caused a huge ripple, you know, in the idea of what kind of structures were happening in a change in consciousness and in a way of business, you know, of, you know, kind of remote people, you know, having remote work, you know, and, you know, having less, you know, the need for less travel to work. I mean, it kind of, again, shattered a lot of structures and created a need for others to come into existence. And, you know, and hearing what the government there is doing and the priorities that they are, you know, initiating, once that model, I think, is operating and showing success, you know, then it becomes a way for other communities who will, you know, undoubtedly, you know, find themselves experiencing natural disasters. It might be a model for them to, you know, if not exactly with the, you know, the tourism and, you know, the uniqueness of Maui, but, you know, in their own community to be able to deal and to create a more earth-conscious system of living.
Yes, Robert, you're really talking about the nature of healing, such an important dynamic in healing, which is that out of the hardship, out of the darkness, out of the wound, comes the directionality toward further life, and that the wound, the hurt, the unfortunate circumstance, even the destruction of something, is because something has been unattended to. And we can talk about it from an ecological point of view, like Lahaina, but we can also talk about it individually. In my work as a spiritual counselor, a lot of times with new clients, they'll tell me that they have some financial devastation, or they've lost their job, or their marriage is breaking up, or there's some illness. And that is always the seed of new life. In the Hawaiian tradition, it is thought that the new day begins at sunset, not at sunrise. And it is out of the darkness. It is out of the darkness that the new day emerges. And so it's important for certainly anyone who's tuning into this kind of program, the recognition that that darkness is there for you. It's shining a light. It's saying you weren't paying attention to something. You weren't looking at something. You were avoiding something. And it's come up to show itself. Another way to say it is that unconscious material that led to the problem emerged in the problem, which means it's no longer unconscious. The light of awareness is now on it, and now you can do something with it, and you can work with it. And so that's true both on the global scale and on our individual developmental paths.
I just find it fascinating, you know, that we are so often shown a kind of a larger example of what we need to see for our own lives. You know, I mean, kind of like one of those mirrors that, you know, things appear larger than they are. You know, the fact of, you know, we're seeing this, you know, huge interaction of events that, you know, in how people will react to those events. And I know, and they sometimes mirror our own little world of, you know, kind of what's happening to us and offering us the opportunity to, you know, to respond likewise, like the community did there, you know, in a healthy way, rather than in an old pattern. So,
we really are thick as bricks, aren't we? Because it's right there for us to see. It's right there to see our disconnection from nature, our disconnection from each other, our disconnection from the truth of the sacred immanence of all things that exist on the earth. It's right there for us to see. And all things, all people, all beings, that separation, the idea of separation is an illusion. We are part of a dynamic ecosystem of which we are a part. And that ecosystem is not just our connection with nature. Of course, it's that, but it's also the people in our communities and the people in our lives and the people in our countries and the people of the earth. And the idea that we're just, that we need these sort of disasters to see it, to return to something that is so obvious. When you look at nature, you see an interconnected, interdependent system that is empathically attuned to all that is within it. And if we would take our cue from our observance, and you can see that if you just go to your garden, and if we could take our cue from the observance of that paradigm, we would adjust our psychology and our philosophical outlook, our worldview, to something that is sustainable, which is cooperation, interdependence, and even nature exemplifies even limitation. There is something that is too much, and we have to also be aware we are not, it is not the sky's the limit. It is not that there is some peak level of humanity where we have a control over the earth. That is a religious and philosophical fallacy and lie. Right. And will ultimately kind of parasuicidal as well, because it says that we can kill our home, and we can't.
Yeah, very much. And in your book, you also mentioned the principle, the quantum inseparability principle, where every atom affects every other atom. And that everything we do matters. You know, I when I read that, it was, you know, to me, it just clearly, you know, stated our interconnectedness with all that is, you know, and all that was, you know, and all that will be.
Yes. If we could think of ourselves as individual cells, as in relation to an organism, and all we have to do is make our individual cell as healthy as it can be so that it is contributing to the health of the organism. If we could just do that, if we could just not have our mess spill over into another person's experience or into another being's experience that isn't a person, that in and of itself, right. If everyone could just do that, could just take care of their own individual cell. And that means robust mental health and taking care of yourself and having enough, not necessarily more than enough. What nature exemplifies is enough. That's, you know, when the tiger is full, It drinks at the river right next to the elk that it just ate, right next to the elk's brother that it just ate. So nature exemplifies what enough is. And so if we could all just attune ourselves a little bit more with a humility and a sense that we are part, we have a legacy to leave in our lives, which is our contribution to the organism. Whatever that looks like, as long as it is growthful, life-affirming, and grows love. And we all can individually do that. Even something as simple as stop road raging. Figure it out. Stop road raging. Regulate yourself.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, there, I mean, depending on where one lives, there can be a lot more frequency or not of that. But that is, an example of, really wasted, misdirected kind of energy.
That's right. If it's not life affirming, I'm kind of not interested.
There you go. That's the way I think one. That's a very healthy approach to living one's life. So shamanism. Let's talk a little bit about shamanism. Can you, for those listeners who may not be aware of what shamanism is, would you mind kind of giving us a shamanism 101 view of what that particular belief system in practice is?
More than anything else, it's a sacred attunement with the natural world. So in shamanism, we see nature as a template to teach us about ourselves. The shamanic journey, which is essentially just a very simple, even childlike merging process, mind merging process, consciousness merging process with elements of nature, that was developed by the original shamans around the time when language was being developed. And why then? Language came the ability for humans to live in mentally constructed realities that were actually away from the here and now, from the organic here and now. Another way to say it is that humans with language could start lying to each other and start lying to themselves. And so the shamans developed this spiritual technology, you could say, to keep us attuned to the natural world. And so shamanism, more than anything else, is about using the natural world, using is the wrong word, but utilizing the natural world and what it teaches us and how it works with us to live better lives. So shamanism was originally developed for very practical things. It was about finding food and protection and medicine and the health of the community. That's originally what it was for. And I think the reason why shamanism is having this sort of resurgence right now is because there is a sense that we have to return to something. With the beginning of civilization, meaning that when the hunter-gatherer communities were starting to be decimated, and when we started this idea, not that long ago, maybe 4,000 or 5,000 years ago, that we have dominion over the earth, that we can part and parcel the earth and part and parcel each other. And what we think of as civilization has actually been quite the opposite, because we've become in some way more savage. We've become more separate. We've become more callous. We've become more narcissistic, even, in how we relate to others. And the original cultures that shamanism emerged from didn't really have that. They weren't perfect, but they didn't have that. There was a sense of that everything in their environment was alive, was sacred, was in conversation. And that is just an entirely different cosmology. There's an ethic in Hawaii, Malama Ka'aina, which means to love the land as you would a sibling or a parent. And that's just really a return to something that everyone used to do. And then you add to that what aloha actually means, which is to share life with another. So imagine the consciousness of loving the natural world that you are in, and even the dwelling that you're in right now. It's all made of earth. It all is made of her, of mother. And so imagine a sense of humility and reverence for that existence. And then when you go meet someone or some being, and you intend to share your life force with them. Aloha does not mean hello and goodbye. It's used like that, but it's about I'm sharing joy with you. That's its essence. And I'm sharing the joy of being alive and the sense that the land itself, that our environment itself is something that loves us, are supposed to love back. And it changes our whole worldview if we enter into life and we adjust our worldview in such a way that we're holding that. And to me, that's the purpose of shamanism. That's the return. And also that we have a lot of healing to do to even get there. And shamanism, it has a lot of practical healing practices. It was the original psychology. And I'm very psychologically astute and in tune, and I can trace, which is the reason why I wrote a book called The Shaman's Mind, because it is about that if you start thinking in these ways, your psychology will adjust. And my personal take is that the Western psychological model needs to adjust even further toward what that original shamanic animistic, meaning everything is animated, everything is sentient, everything is alive.
Mm-hmm.
Of the world. Yeah, I agree.
Now, are there different types of shaman? In the introduction, I indicated that you had studied alongside shamans in Mexico, Brazil, Bali, Costa Rica, Nicaragua, and Hawaii. So there's quite a diverse group of cultures that you have studied alongside. So, can you tell us a little bit about are there unique, I'm sure there are very common kinds of practices and goals of shamans in each of those cultures, but did you find anything kind of unique in some of them or different from one another?
Well, what I had to do in working with those different cultures, because I'm not of any of those cultures, and so what I was looking for, I think what most people are looking for who study or become shamanic practitioners, is the universality. And so while there's certain different geographies, different practices, different rituals, different music, etc., that there is a kind of a fundamental universal shamanic paradigm that is present in every shamanic culture that I have participated in. The Hawaiian one was just the one that helped me understand how they think a bit more. It gave me, rather than just experiencing how they interact with the world, my book, what I'm getting at is how they think about the world. And I'm presumptuous to say that I am in some way being a mouthpiece for every shamanic culture, which I'm certainly not. But there does seem to be a universal shamanic paradigm that they all follow. They all have a reverence for nature. They all are community-minded. They all are aware of the elemental forces. They all are connected to the sun and moon and star cycles. They all are a lever as well as a taker culture, meaning they take what they need from the natural world and then they leave something in return. They all see reality, the environment, their environment as sacred, as of great spirit. They all tend to be egalitarian. They all tend to be permissive of different sexual orientation. Essentially, whatever your nature is, they're okay with it. And they tend to not adhere to cultural rules, meaning cultural conditioning, that pulls us away from our bodies, that pulls us away from our emotions. And we live in a culture that says, well, I don't care about your feelings. You shouldn't care about your feelings either. It's just how it looks. We live in a, it's not how it feels, it's how it looks culture. And that is the antithesis of a shamanic worldview. It's about how it feels. It's not even, and it's also about that in shamanic cultures, in earth wisdom, so this is beyond even shamanic cultures, this is just the goddess cultures, the earth-based cultures, there's a sense of we're not looking to be good. We're not looking to be good. We're looking to be true. And that's a very big question.
Yeah, very, very much so. Gosh, well, Jonathan, we're about halfway through the show, so I want to take just a quick 90-second break. And then when we return, I believe, you know, there is a view of three worlds in shamanism. So I kind of want to talk about that when we come back, okay? Everyone, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder, we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to the more than 1,700 shows we have aired during the past 13 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, photography products and services, calendars, and greeting cards. There is also a link to our account at Fine Art America, where you can purchase items such as mugs, prints, pillows, and more. Our show is available as a free podcast on multiple platforms, such as iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Podcasts, and Audible, with icons to each platform on our homepage. We are also available on social media platforms such as Facebook, X, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Threads. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us again today. My special guest is Jonathan Hammond, coming to us from Maui. We are talking about his new book, The Shaman's Mind, Huna Wisdom to Change Your Life. And again, you can find out more about that, as well as the new album that he has on shamanic journeys and meditations called The Shaman Within, by visiting his website, which is www.jonathanhammond.com. And again, that's JonathanHammond.com. Okay, with that, we're back, Jonathan. Aloha. Okay. So, the three worlds of, shamanism. Can you talk to us about that? I found that to be quite an interesting concept.
Yeah. The main thing to say about it is that it's not far away from you. You can actually feel them right now. So the lower world is your instinctual nature. So you sort of came out of the lower world, meaning that you came from the earth with certain circumstances, with certain skin color, with a certain gifts, certain sexuality into that family. And so it's our source self. And in our source self is also the instinctual nature of who we are, who we actually are, our most unconditioned self. The lower world is also about the unconscious. So the easiest way to understand the unconscious is a very simple example. If you break your arm, you go to the doctor and they set your arm. But if you break your arm, you go to the shaman to find out why you broke your arm. And that's the unconscious. It's the story underneath the surface reality. That's the lower world. The surface reality is the middle world, is this world, the world that we see. It's a world of that is measurable. There is empirical data in it. It's the outward surface reality. And the upper world is the spiritual realm, the realms of the spirit guides, of the masters, of the ancestors, of the voices that whisper in your ear and say, try this, go in this direction, go in that direction. And so a very simple way to understand those three worlds is just attuning to a blade of grass. So a blade of grass is rooted into the earth, and the earth births it as itself, and it has an instinctual way of being. And there is mythology, a story around how that blade of grass came into being that we tune into really imaginatively and creatively. And then the middle world is that blade of grass, and the upper world is an angel or a deva or some loving being whispering over that blade of grass, grow, grow, grow. That's the easiest way to understand the three worlds.
Okay. Now, in the afterword of your book, you kind of relayed an experience that you had on the beach of you experiencing the upper world with, I believe, a young Jonathan. So I thought that was quite a anecdote for the upper world. So can you kind of share that with the listeners? Because I thought it was interesting.
What's interesting is that our access to the upper world comes through the lower world, comes through our unconscious, comes through our inner child. That's the easiest way to say it. We fundamentally memorized ourselves to be. And some of how we remember both genetic memory and learned memory, who we've memorized ourselves to be. And some of that, some of what we've learned might not actually be true or helpful. And that's part of doing healing work is to undo that. But the idea is that we have this inner child who learned a worldview, who learned who they were in the world. And some of what they learned may be antithetical to their best interest. They may have learned that they're not good enough, that they're not smart enough, that there's something wrong with them, that they don't look right, they may have learned that money is a bad thing. They may have learned that all men are terrible. They may have learned that women aren't to be trusted, all kinds of things. But that's the, and the inner child, of course, holds gifts as well. And, so a lot of healing work is really done on that inner child. In fact, the whole last section of my book is based on a practice called Ho'oponopono, which is directly related to healing that inner child from the misbelief that it holds. And when you start to do that healing with this very soft and small and not small, but essence part of you, you get a lot of help from the upper world, however you think of it, the spirits, the ascended masters, the universal chi, the energy that makes the creative energies of the universe. You get a lot of help when you start reframing that child into what it was always supposed to be, which of course is divine. And so in the last part of that book, what I was really getting at was that I had done a lot of work on my inner child and had reparented that inner child to a better way of understanding himself. And I sat him next to me in this very heavenly place, which is a certain, well, all of Maui, but a certain beach on Maui that feels a little otherworldly. It feels a little, it feels, just when you look around, that that it's upper world, that it's heavenly. And so I had taken mm-hmm. this child that I'd done a lot of healing on, and I brought him and said, you can experience this heavenly energy. And so it was a real congruency between my middle world self and my unconscious mind, or my child, my inner child, and the forces, the upward forces that helped me get there. So that's what that was.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. Well, I just thought that was it was just a good example for people to understand, you know, the upper world, you know, and how to access, or, you know,
always, I'm always telling people find your own Hawaii. Find your own Hawaii. Take care of that child within and take them to Hawaii.
Yeah.
Because if they need healing, they deserve Hawaii. They deserve they've been through enough. And so whatever Hawaii is for you, take them there. And what that might just look like is take them to safety. Don't put yourself in dangerous situations. Make it be a prerequisite that relationships are safe and honest. Define what home is for you, so that home is a place where we tell the truth and we advocate for each other and we don't allow elephants in the room and we don't go to bed mad at each other and we talk it out. And that version of that, that's just as Hawaii is Hawaii, as far as I'm concerned. And take your child there.
There you go. A good way of approaching life and relationships. Now, you spend a good part of your book talking about HUNA and its principles. So would you mind sharing with the listeners about what HUNA is?
Yeah. So I said earlier that one of the things that I got from the Hawaiian paradigm was how the shamans think, how they universally tend to think. And so HUNA is the philosophy. Seven very simple ideas, although they're very deep, but seven simple ideas that if you attune to in yourself and understand, will help you merge your mind into that shamanic cosmology, that shamanic outlook. So I'll just give you an example. The first principle says, kind of English translation of the Hawaiian word is that the world is what you think it is. And I'm going to add, the world is what you think it is, both consciously and unconsciously. So what that means is that how you think about the world, how you think of yourself in relationship to the world, and what you unconsciously believe about the world and believe about yourself will actually become the world, become your world. Another way to say it is that if you think of a dream, the easiest way to understand dream interpretation is that everything in the sleeping dream, everything that happens, every being, object, etc., is a reflection of something about you. That's the easiest way to deal with to understand and interpret dreams. So this principle is saying that the outward dream of our lives, the people, places, and things in our lives, are simply a reflection of something inwardly about us. So that outward world is what we think it is, created, what it is a reflection of our inward dream, the outward dream or reflection of our inward dream. And this, it requires a lot of responsibility if you're going to follow that principle, because it says you got to take inventory. You got to know what it is that you're thinking about. You got to know what it is that you're believing. You have to be conscious of where am I lending my attention, where am I lending my thoughts? What am I financing? What am I giving clout and legitimacy to? What voice in my head am I listening to? Not every voice in our head is a helpful voice. And not every narrative that we have about our lives is a helpful narrative. And so it requires real discipline to examine ourselves and say that what I think about, how I think of myself, how I think of what I think is possible for me will be a reflection of that. And the second principle just says that there aren't any limits. that there are no limits to what we can believe, what we can achieve for ourselves. It's a way to throw down the gauntlet for believing something above and beyond what we think might be possible for ourselves. There are no limits means that potential can be reached. So that's the second principle. And on from there.
Yeah.
The idea is it's a deep inventory with ourselves and how we're looking at our lives. And the recognition that however we're doing that is how we are contributing to our own world and the collective consciousness.
Now, how does that pair up? Earlier in the show, you mentioned how, you know, sometimes there's, you know, the belief that there are no limits, like when it came to interaction with the planet, with the Earth. So is the no limits kind of directed toward one's individual pursuit?
One's individual pursuit. I think that the adding to that principle would be there are no limits based on natural law. Okay. Another way to say it is that anything's possible if you can figure out how to do it. It opens you to possibility and to potential, but it is also within natural law. I think the principle there are no limits is also saying that it's about the recognition that we're not separate from each other, that we are connected. That's the quantum inseparability principle, that we are all connected. And that means what it is that you yearn for, what it is that you want, what it is your unrealized potential, those things are already there. We are not separate from them. We just have to become them. So there are no limits means that the very things that we're yearning to create in ourselves and in life are actually present because we aren't separate from them. We just have to develop them from the inside.
Yeah, okay, great. I just wanted to clarify that. The idea of no limits. So now you did mention, you know, the Anaponopono. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I know that there are four steps, you know, to it, you know, as far as a way of healing, you know. So can you talk just a little bit about that, you know, and the steps? Because I think that's an easy way, I think, for people to be able to kind of put into practice healing idea.
Yeah. Ho'oponopono, and everyone says wrong until they said it a million times, so I get it. The translation is essentially ho'o means to make, pono means to make right, but pono is doubled, so it means to make right times two, or to make right more right. It's about cleaning it up. And Ho'oponopono was originally a family practice, so it was almost like a family therapy. But there were certain Hawaiian healers of the 20th century who turned it into a kind of individual practice. So the easiest way to understand what Ho'oponopono is getting at is that there is a hurt in us, whatever that hurt is, could be an illness, a low self-esteem, a limiting belief, a sense of not holding our gifts, whatever that wound is, we all have them. And the idea is that it's the child that holds those things, that the child learned something about life that actually caused them to hold these things. And so our adult self or our parent self holds that child, recognizes that there is a part of us that is actually a child that is holding us back, that is holding themselves back. And you administer love to that child. And so there are four phrases that are traditionally used. Very simple, I love you. So you're telling the child that they are, whatever wounds they're holding was born upon love. So you're administering love. You're giving the child love. I'm sorry is essentially you're saying to the child, I'm sorry that you feel this way about yourself. I'm sorry that you're hurting. I'm sorry that these are your circumstances that led you to this misbelief that you have about yourself and the world. And so I'm sorry that it's a way of saying, I see you. I see you. You're identifying, you're naming, that what you're experiencing is unfair and it has caused you to block yourself from your own goodness or from life's goodness. And I'm sorry about that. Please forgive me, is the third phrase, and that's about, please forgive me for all the times when I let you do that. Please forgive me for all the times when I didn't do ho'oponopono with you. For all the times when I agreed with your misbelief about yourself or your brokenness. Please forgive me. So you're actually gaining trust from this child that you'll show up differently. And then the last one is thank you. And thank you is thank you for going along with this new way of being. Thank you for trying so hard. Thank you for even holding that wound and holding that misbelief because you couldn't do any better at the time. And so it's a real sense of having a loving rapport with yourself and a loving rapport with those parts of you that you think are broken, unwanted, embarrassing, yeah. Shameful. Yeah. So that's essentially the practice.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you. Because, you know, I think, you know, those four statements, going through the four statements and what they mean can be just very healing, you know, and I think that's, you know, an easy way, not easy, you know, it's a kind of an easier way to connect, you know, with that inner child that needs healing, so.
Yes, and when the child feels differently about themselves and has different beliefs about themselves, now we're back to the first principle of HUNA that says that I create the world based on what I think and how I think, both consciously and unconsciously, and now this child is thinking differently about themselves and so and more positively about themselves and more lovingly and empowered about themselves. And the first principle says if you do that, then your outer world will start reflecting that inner reality. So that's how they go together.
Yeah. Very, very much. Well, we're down toward the end of the show, Jonathan, but I do want to just again mention, you know, that you do have a new album called The Shaman Within, and it's with shamanic journeys and meditations and produced by HemiSync. Now, I was first introduced to HemiSync with a gentleman, Joe Gallenberger, who has created several albums using, you know, that particular method or process. And, you know, I know from experience, putting the headphones on and just allowing the music kind of to take me wherever, you know, it's a wonderful experience. So tell us a little bit about, you know, kind of what you included as far as journeys and meditations on that particular album.
Yeah, well, I'm a teacher, so they're not complacent journeys. They're really about, I think there are six or seven journeys. They are that universal shamanism we're talking about. They are about, the class is really, or the album is really a course, even though I don't present it quite as directly as that. And so we're looking at shamanic cosmology and worldview. We do some inner child work. There's working with your origin story, meaning where you came from. That's a big shamanic idea. Like I said, shamanic healing practices. I can't remember the rest of them offhand, but they're really what I wanted to get at with that album are really core universal shamanic ideas and practices, and to bring you through them. And the HemiSync technology is just great because it just, I think the easiest way to understand it is it sort of softens that analytical mind and lets you experience in a different way, in a more intuitive way. That's the easiest way to understand it. Yeah, so it's a course.
Yeah.
I have a course coming up to May 18th, which is based on my book. It's online. You can find it on my website. It's 3 weeks long, although it's recorded. So if you don't make the two sessions a week, there's time to make it up. You don't have to do it necessarily in those 3 weeks, but that's when it's presented. And that's a real deep dive, even beyond what I wrote in my book. That's another shamanic course. So both the Shaman Within and the Shaman's Mind online course, which is happening May 18th, they're really about like learning about shamanism, really diving into shamanic practice and relating shamanic material to our contemporary Western paradigm. Because I think we need both. We need I don't think it's enough to just have a Western psychological model. I think we need shamanism, and I don't think shamanism is enough. I think we also need that to inform our Western psychological model. So in both those courses, I really try to help bridge that.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and I did notice that particular course that's offered through GlideWing online courses for people to sign up, Ancient Shamanic Wisdom to Change Your Life. So, well, Jonathan, this has really been a treat. I really want to thank you for your time. I'm glad that we're able to catch up, on what's gone on over the last 4 years. And, again, thank you for your time. And we are connected on Facebook. So those folks who use that particular platform, feel free to join Jonathan and myself there. And I look forward to seeing what comes next for you.
Aloha, mahalo to you and all your listeners, and blessings to everyone. And go live your life and contribute to the collective just by being well.
Thank you very much. Again, everyone, today my special guest, again, joining us from Maui, is Jonathan Hammond. We've been talking about his new book, The Shaman's Mind, Huna Wisdom to Change Your Life. And also his new album, The Shaman Within. You can find out more by visiting his website, which is jonathanhammond.com, and that's Jonathan is jonathanhammond.com. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to BikeRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. To become a show follower, visit www.blogtalkradio.com/BikeRadioMe and click on the follow link. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Bike Radio Me. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's BITERADIO.ME. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.